Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, hello. This is Caroline Sinisa Levine, co-founder of Six Figure Start Career Coaching and host for today's episode of the Six Figure Start Career Advice Radio Show. Six Figure Start is a career coaching firm that is comprised exclusively of former Fortune 500 recruiters. So we share the inside knowledge into the hiring process and what employers really want. Now, normally, I spend the full half hour of our show answering your questions about job search, about career advancement, about career change, sometimes about entrepreneurship, because for some people, finding fulfilling and financially rewarding careers means going into business for yourself. So we talk about all of that, but today we actually have a special show. On the show today, I have Katie Volz, who is formerly a recruiter. So like I said, we always like to share the inside process, behind the scenes of the hiring process. And Katie was in recruiting and HR in the financial services industry and then went on to become a career coach, including coaching at Yale and at NYU. And so in addition to talking about job search overall, we'd love to talk about job search specifically for graduates, recent graduates, that whole campus recruiting, which actually I think even when you're an experienced professional, you can learn a lot. Thinking back to that process, your early days starting out, the good habits that you had then carrying over later on into your career. So, Katie, are you on the line? Katie, did I unmute you?
Oh, I can hear you.
Yeah, okay. Great. So I think I had you on mute. I had a big introduction. And I was talking all about you, and then I was like, "Hi, Katie." Great. So did I leave anything out? Right? I mean, your HR career was predominantly in financial services. Did you do other industries as well, or was it mostly in banking?
Yeah, I started out actually in technology recruiting and then management consulting recruiting at PwC. And so while the majority of it took place at Merrill Lynch and in the financial services, I cut my teeth in management consulting at a time when management consulting and technology and IT were kind of at the forefront of what was happening in the industry here in the U.S. and abroad, too. But I think it was a great time to learn. And also been recruiting through the ups and downs of the financial services industry. Their rises and fall of the past. So it's been an interesting time.
No, absolutely. So tell me, what are you doing in terms of coaching-wise? Because I know that you spent some time with, in the university level coaching MBA students, right? And then at Yale, mm-hmm. it was undergrads or?
Yeah. Kind of one, two, mm-hmm. So now primarily the clients that I work with are people who are looking to make a transition or even recent graduates who have not quite landed that dream job or are looking at what might be the right career fit for them. And within the MBA world, one thing that was unique about NYU at Stern was that the clients that I worked with were both current students as well as in the full-time and part-time MBA program, but also recent alum. And so Stern, like a lot of universities, offers career coaching for alumni. As you see, this is the career process is a lifelong one, and so they offer support to alumni, which is wonderful. And so I had the fortune of working with people who were both current students, but also those who are in transition or looking to make a new change in their career as alumni.
Right. So you talked about kind of the ups and downs of, say, financial services. And of course, that hit a lot of industries as well. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, just now, like, what are you seeing in the job market or hearing from your recruiting friends or perhaps based on the questions you're getting from your clients? Like, what's new and happening in the job market?
You know, for better or worse, I think the story is just, it's not that it's new, it's just increasing about the need to continually be out there and to network. And so while I feel like I've been hearing this and then saying this, both as a recruiter and then a career consultant and a career coach for a decade, maybe. It almost seems like you can't hold a conversation without at least exploring the extent to which a client is out there, even if it's online. And I think, Caroline, this is something you've talked about a lot, but it's like beating a dead horse. And yet it's something that is such a gift, because for many of us, we've been in the recruiting world for 20 years or so, and this was not an option. It wasn't a necessity or even an opportunity for those looking to make a career change or looking to break into the job market. Networking, social media, all of that is something that's become a lot more important and a lot more vital over the last 5-10 years. And I think, so my response that it's not new, it's just it's increased the need to be out there.
Right.
What has changed, I guess, is probably the availability to do so. That for those who consider themselves introverts or don't really have time, it doesn't take a lot to be present or to be visible. And I think that's a gift. I think that's it's not that you have to go to a networking event twice a week or even once a month, and you should be. A healthy job seeker should be out there at least once a month, but I think you can do it right from your computer, and you can do it
right
in line waiting for coffee, and so that is a good thing.
Do you give different advice networking-wise or, say, social online networking-wise to undergraduates versus the MBAs versus experienced alums, or do you find that it's more
that's
similar?
It's such an interesting point you bring up, because, and you had said something about this too, one piece of advice that remains consistent across all the entire spectrum of job seekers is you have to work within, while we always encourage clients and students to take some risks and to expand their comfort zone, you also have to work within your wheelhouse and what works for you. And so as a student, for instance, you have a student who's incredibly bright, driven, smart, but just can't quite crack the job search code. I always talk to students about what works for them in their studies. So think about how you study. Think about how you approach a final or a midterm. And what works? What's worked for you? And sometimes students will say, it's cramming. I literally cram, 12 hours before a final. I sit down. And, how can you utilize that approach? And it might not always be the best approach, but if it's working for you, how can you use that for your job search? So maybe it's taking a chunk of time and dedicating it towards your studies, or to your job search, rather. That's for undergrads as well as students, as well as people currently working, professionals in the field right now. I think the opportunities as a student, be it undergrad or graduate student, are sometimes increased if your school happens to be one who brings in a bunch of recruiters and you have industry nights, networking nights, career fairs, and on-campus interviews. Obviously, that goes away to a certain extent as a professional. And a lot of alumni from universities who have had that feel like a fish out of water then when they're looking to make a career change. But fortunately, those same types of things exist, but in a different format. So while it's not a career fair for your college or university, it might be something at your local library or even within church. I find religious groups and temples oftentimes have networking groups that you can go to. So that's where you're working within your comfort zone and within a population that you're already familiar with potentially, but you're able to do something very productive for your career while also checking that social obligation, that networking box too.
Right.
I think people in the job market or currently working often feel that they're at a disadvantage because they don't have hours on end to spend at their job search. But I disagree. I think they're actually fortunate in that they can be talking to people right at their current job. So, or even clients of theirs who they may talk to every day for work reasons, they can get to know in a different capacity and maybe even invite them to coffee to talk about the company that they work for or business that they're doing. And so I think you're equally advantaged if you're simply out there. If it's out there going to class or going to a meeting, you have the opportunity to learn and to grow your knowledge about what else is out there.
Yeah. So, okay, so let's turn this around and put your recruiter hat back on if you can, if you can think back to that time. And it's so interesting, Katie, because I also recruited for financial services, for management consulting, and for technology. So I feel like, I mean, I feel like I can say, this was my experience, okay? So I also recruited for those industries. They are very sought after competitive industries. Mm-hmm. Certainly management consulting and the front office part of financial services, so
right.
investment banking front office, very into pedigree and kind of the very narrow background, frankly, I think, of people that they hire. And so, you know, if you think back, put your recruiter hat back on, were there networking best practices, you know, where you are like, okay, this person has it going on, and were there networking, I can't believe that they did that, you know, that you can share? Because I think that there are going to be listeners who are like, yeah, absolutely, networking, of course, but, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. You know, I think people try to network, but I do think it's hard. I think it's hard to develop these relationships. So you were a recruiter. Like, how did you develop relationships? You know, like, what worked for you?
I don't
or on you,
mind.
I guess. Right.
Yeah. One thing that I think is a misnomer is that you have to. So it absolutely helps if you come from a top school or you work in an organization that's very well known. Absolutely. But yet, when you look around, even in your current work environment, if you happen to be working, it's not that 98% of people came from those top schools. There's always, typically, unless it's a lot of hedge funds, technology firms, sometimes they cherry pick. And that is what it is. And I don't mean to negate that necessarily. I believe that exists. But there are certainly many, many other companies for whom that's not the case.
Yep.
And I think in those cases, oftentimes the referrals from anyone do make a difference, even if it's someone that is not very senior in the company referring someone onto you as a recruiter. I always looked at those resumes that came across my desk, because if you respected the person who gave you the resume, or even if you didn't know the person who gave you the resume, it still stands out because you feel, as a recruiter, now I have an obligation to respond to this person. So I'm more confirming the belief that the referral from anyone is important. The thing that's obnoxious, really, is the repeated attempts to contact either the recruiter or the person who might be referring you on. So if it's a non-HR contact or a line person,
right.
It does then, and people ask that all the time, I'm sure of you too, like, at what point does it become an overkill or actually...
Yeah. So if that is a question I get all the time. So what's your take on it? And then I'll share you mine, right? What
I would
makes
love
it
to
overkill
hear your thoughts
versus
on this
persistence?
Too.
Yeah.
I know. I think timing is important. So even knowing where that person is in their business cycle. So if it's year end, that's, you know, the fall is a tough time for a lot of people. So knowing that if you reach out to them via email and they don't get back to you, or through LinkedIn and they don't get back to you for a week, 2 weeks, I think it's okay, you know, 10 to 14 days later, to reconnect and just say, I know you're extremely busy, would love to take even 15 minutes of your time. Or maybe that's too much. Maybe it's 10 minutes of your time. It's when you see the number come up on the caller ID multiple times. And as a recruiter, and I'm sure you got this too, that was one of the hardest things for poor job seekers, was when those spy phones, we call them, back in the day, came into place and you started to see people's phone numbers, and then you would know that they were calling repeatedly and not leaving messages. So I think twice, and then, I don't know, a month, even 2 months later, three times, and that's it. I do operate by the three-strike rule. I think some people would say even three is too many if it's not within a long enough amount of time. But what's your thought on that?
So, okay, so I have a different take in terms of, it's not so much the number of times, but I do think that it's the repeat, do you have something new to say, is basically the thing, right? So if I were contacted by someone three or more times, and each time there was something different that this person had to say. You know, maybe it was that they were working on something. Maybe it was that they had read something. Maybe it was that they had some kind of insight. I feel like the clock starts ticking anew. I think where it gets really annoying is where people are networking under the guise of, I need you to help me find a job, as opposed to, I have something to share with you. So specifically, I can think of three examples. You know, as you were talking, and you were talking about this notion of a referral, and I do want to underscore to people, we are not talking about the chairman of the board referring, you know, their nephew, right? Like, when we say referral, I mean, it literally is anyone in the company. I will totally back you up to say that that absolutely works. I mean, you could be recruiting for, you know, some kind of investment banking front office, and someone from IT gives you a resume, and you look at that, you know, because as an employee, you figure that they know the culture, and you do it as a courtesy to that employee. So I agree with you 110% that that absolutely works. And I remember distinctly I was recruiting for, now this was a media company, but it was a finance position, and I knew that the person who was managing that hire came from a management consulting background. And this candidate was a student, a mid-level school, so not one of the tier one, you know, business schools, came in to interview, and he had your everyday service jobs. In fact, he worked at a movie theater for a large part of his career. And I remember talking to him about that experience, and he knew everything about that theater. He could tell by how quickly the cups were going, you know, if it was going to be a good day or bad.
Yeah.
He had all of these really interesting business insights into the theater. And I remember I called the hiring manager right away, and I said, this guy is like a management consultant. He thinks like a management consultant. And she was like, I want to see him. It didn't matter that he went to, I can't even remember what school he went to. It didn't matter because he clearly had that mind, and she appreciated that. And we had, you know, and I was able to refer him in that way. And that, I think, is the power of, you know, that, you know, an employee type of referral. So in this case, it was a referral from HR, but it was me as the employee talking to her and saying, you have to see this guy, versus me just kind of sending the resume and hoping that he gets selected. He probably wouldn't, because his experience wasn't, you know, finance.
Right.
I mean, it really wasn't obvious.
And it probably wouldn't have gotten picked up in a keyword search. It had to be connected to a personal referral. But
something
that you said too, which I think is so important, he seemed not only to have the right mindset for a consultant, but also he seemed to be passionate about what it was that he was doing. And I think that is something that you cannot, that pedigree or even work experience don't necessarily convey. If you have passion and enthusiasm for what you're doing, even if it's changing cups at a movie theater, or one of my favorite candidates from Merrill Lynch was, he was the campus bus driver, and he was a senior, and that was a senior job, and he didn't have internships. He had almost 40 hours a week, especially, you know, driving the campus bus. And I think that's someone who has a work ethic that you cannot train someone to have. So I think that's really important too, is just thinking about how, even in your LinkedIn profile, are you communicating excitement for what it is that you're working on? If you have a recent post about a project you're doing, or if you reach out to someone, to your point, Caroline, I've been working on this lately. It's such a cool prospect that I have. You know, just communicating even in your word choice, enthusiasm, I think that goes a long way, because it's contagious.
No, absolutely. And the other thing about, you know, financial services, management consulting, technology, I'll put media in there, you know, biotech, you know, any kind of startup environment, a lot of these very sought-after competitive jobs, you know, people think that they want these jobs, but they don't know about them, you know. And the passion comes in when you meet someone who actually, you know, knows who the top consulting firms are, or who's, you know, up on the latest blogs or the latest innovations. And that's so that's so good to hear, because then you believe them. You know, getting back to that point about when does it become annoying, you know, it's when I'm approached by someone and they say, oh, I really want, you know, consulting or tech or, you know, whatever, and then they don't know anything about the sector, you're just like, you just don't believe them. It's like dating. You're not going to believe someone who can't remember your name or can't remember anything about you.
You know, you, and I think something you said, too, is about if you're truly interested in something, you will take the time to learn about it. And you can't, I do not expect students or clients to necessarily know what it is that they are called to do. But you start to use hints from their day-to-day experience. So if you, it doesn't mean, if you love sports, it doesn't mean you're meant to be a sports announcer or a coach necessarily, although it might. But it's tips to think about what things you're naturally drawn to. So if you pull up Wall Street Journal and you are laboring through every single, all the content that you read, nothing isn't interesting you. And then you say, I love the markets. You know, the Financial Times, I will be bored to tears if I read it, but I love the markets. You can't necessarily, those two statements don't go together. But if someone pulls up an article or references an article that they've read and they're really excited about it, if it's a blog or somebody that they're following who just posts about a specific topic, that's a key to something that might interest you. If you really like it and it's not work to read an article on that subject, that is a sign to you. So it doesn't necessarily, it's something you have to say to a recruiter, well, I only read these blogs, so I know this is what I'm supposed to do. But just for your own sake, thinking about what you're naturally drawn to do and what subjects in school you naturally enjoyed and why. It might be the professor, but it might also be because you love change management or you truly love biology. And so I think using your own experiences as hints as to what you might become passionate about if you're having a hard time thinking about what that should be or could be for you.
Well, I think that example that you gave about the markets, I think what's so powerful about that one, you know, let's take financial services, you know, so it does two things, right? Because if you're passionate about the markets, so one, it's, yes, so I'm for real. You know, I want to be in banking and not just because everybody wants to do it, but it's also because I have a genuine interest in it. But then it also can showcase your skills because there are – you know, I mean, there's just a limited amount of slots and there's a limited amount of time that you're going to have to network with people. And so if you can get out in the same breath, it's like, I'm for real, I'm really interested, and I have the skill. You know, I remember I coached someone who came from more of a history, legal, you know, qualitative background, competing. He didn't even have an MBA. He went to graduate school for international relations and then decided he wanted to do equity research, which is one of the most sought-after jobs. And he ended up getting hired. He was one of six out of 2,000, I think, applicants for a bulge bracket investment bank, their London office, as an equity research associate. And one of the things that he did was he actually, you know, pulled apart a stock that he was following so that when he was networking, he could actually talk about, you know, what was the latest and greatest with this. I was interested in gaming, so it was a gaming stock. So it was something that he could talk about with excitement and with passion, but at the same time, it also was like, okay, I know how to value something, and I know, you know, I'm not just someone who's interested. I'm also skilled.
Yeah, it really backs up what you're saying. And I think, again, trying to think about that particular example of your this client who didn't have the exact background that they may seek, his the time that he had taken to follow that stock and then to be able to articulate his thoughts on that particular stock, that trumps the specific MBA degree, let's say, or even the CFA if they're looking for specific qualifications. And those things come in time. But I do think that the natural interest that a client or a student has is what will ultimately lead to their own satisfaction. There's a career assessment tool, and it's called StrengthsFinder or StrengthsQuest, and it's all about, instead of trying to make you mediocre at something that you could probably be trained to do, you want to take the things that you're naturally interested in, your natural strengths of yours, and make them exceptional, and to spend time making what you do naturally well, make that an exceptional aspect to your career and your life. And, you know, that's, I love that theory because I think a lot of people feel like if I just spent more time on this, I could be truly successful. And in some cases, that is the case. But I think more often than not, identifying true interests, true talents, and making them what cause you to stand apart is where you should be spending your time.
No, that's such a great point. And StrengthsFinder, StrengthsQuest, that's a great tip. We just have a minute or so left. Is there any other tip or strategy, something that I didn't prompt you on that you would like to share, or something coming up for you that you would like to share for our listeners that they can?
It's actually, I was just reading something today, not related to careers, but it was about seven things on a platform that will cause you to, that will help you have productive and fulfilling days. And it was everything from sleep, social activity, activity like exercise, but one of the things was focused time. And I read into that one more because it was less obvious. So spending a focused amount of time on something without distraction. And so if it's a job search, if it's something for your personal life or your professional life, trying to make that time focused, which is becoming increasingly harder in today's world. So turning off devices and really focusing on what it is you're doing. Hopefully it's the job search or the career exploration process at some point for you, but really focusing on that will make a difference.
That's such a great, great point. And I actually use an online countdown timer. So I will, you know, when I'm trying to get something done and maybe I'm dreading it a little bit, so maybe you've got some job search research and you just don't like that part, or working on your resume and you're kind of dreading it, I set the timer for 25 minutes, if I can go the full 25 minutes, or 50 minutes, you know, then I'll take a 10-minute break if I want to try to go longer. And then I don't check email, you know, I just try to work until that timer rings, and then I can decide if I keep going or I take a few minutes break and then set the timer again. So I'm such a big fan of that non-distraction. Thanks for bringing that up. That's such a great, great point.
And that's very manageable, too, what you're saying. It makes it seem less daunting, I think. 25 minutes we can find.
Well, I so appreciate, Katie Volz, you coming on our show to talk about just, I mean, this is so much, you know, I feel like we're both kind of repeating each other, but I love, you know, I think that listeners need to hear, like, the different viewpoints, that it's not that there's this conspiracy about networking. It really does work. That's why so many people, you know, recommend it. And I think that's great. And you can read more about Katie. She's actually one of the coaches with Six Figure Start, and so you can see more about her on our site. And we are going to continue these recruiter HR/coach interviews. Next week, I'm talking to Laura Basson, who specializes in working with international professionals who are looking in the U.S. So that's going to be a really interesting discussion crossing over. We live in a more global society, and so both U.S. professionals need to know how to look abroad, and then, of course, if you're abroad coming here, you need to know about job search here. So that will be really interesting, and so we hope you join us for that, and you can hear past episodes of our show on our blog, lots of free resources on the blog, sixfigurestart.com, and more inside information in our free fall webinar series, which is actually starting tomorrow. So it runs tomorrow through November. We're going to do six webinars called Confessions of a Former Recruiter. And we're going to be talking about resumes, interviewing, social media, how to get noticed, negotiation, everybody asks. So we've got a lot of things coming up. So check out sixfigurestart.com for information on all of that. And Katie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Great. This is Caroline Sinisa-Levine, co-founder of Six Figure Start, host for the Six Figure Start Career Advice Show. I will see you on the show next week.